Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. Jeremy and Gretchen, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi there.
Got a great show for you this week. We're going to be talking a little bit about the modern history of Halloween, starting in the late 1800s and how it's evolved into the holiday we do today with all the costumes and different things. And it sounds like it was very different. So that's going to be interesting coming up. We've got a movie review this week, actually, too, the new Will Smith movie, Gemini Man. We're also going to be talking about Downton Abbey that came out a couple of weeks ago. Very good film and very much, I think, worth seeing. We're also going to have a book review this week, Set in Stone by Frank Morin. And Jeremy, I know that you read that and you're going to tell us all about what that is. Send us your questions and your comments. That's how we put our programming together. Our phone number is 503-766-6264, one user friendly on Facebook and Twitter. Send us your questions and comments. We got them on the air. What's in the news?
Well, there's something, it says True Act, and it's spelled with capital letters, so I'm assuming it stands for something. I have no idea what this is about. Tell me, do you have any idea?
Yeah, this is actually something that I think time has come a long time ago, and what it has to do is dealing with the surprise fees that cable TV and broadcast providers have. So, and this is actually something that's been causing a lot of the cord cutting because they'll advertise one price, but then you have to rent set-top boxes and you have to do all these different things. There was even a cable company out there that charged a fee to pay your bill. And so this type of thing is something that a lot of people have been complaining about to agencies like the FCC and others. So we have two representatives, our Senator Ed Merkley and Representative Anna Issue, who are putting this bill out there. It's called the True Fees Act. And the whole title of it is Truth in Billing, Remedies, and User Empowerment Over Fees. And the idea here is that when the companies, like your cable companies, these would be the bigger ones like Comcast or Charter or whatever happens to be in your area, are required to tell you what you're actually going to pay instead of something else. And while that seems like common sense, that hasn't been what's been going on. So that's what this is. We'll see if it actually gets passed. But I think it's something a lot of people would appreciate, just knowing Indeed. What's really going on out there. And when it comes down to it, you can actually hit fees like $120, $130 bucks a month for classic cable TV. And if you do over the top, you get an internet connection, which is $30, $35. And then a TV service, which can start at about $25. So you can see where there's a huge difference in the pricing.
Our second article here is going to be augmented reality at industrial plants.
Yeah, so this is kind of a cool thing, too. Next week, we're going to be at the virtual reality conference and seeing what's new in the technology with all this type of thing. And just the real quick recap of that, virtual reality is where you have the mask. It changes the entire environment around you. But there's another part of this that's actually been around for a long time, but just has had a little trouble catching on, called augmented reality. We've worked with it in the past, and the idea with this is you would wear something like a set of glasses. You would still see the environment around you. So if you're at your desk, you would still see your desk, but it adds information that's displayed kind of like a HUD that you see personally. And industrial plants are starting to adopt this. So you can go into the plant and see what the different machinery is, what the maintenance is, what the readouts are on the gauges, which you might not be able to see across the room, and this type of thing. And it's a huge deal for safety, but it's also really increasing efficiency.
Yeah, I can imagine if something's like you could overheat, you could keep track of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Through a system like that. Yeah,
absolutely. One of the other things that I like with this too is I've been playing with it a little bit with Google Lens, is working on the car. So you can actually look at your engine and get the manuals and things right on the HUD. And it's a subset of this kind of an idea. So you're not having to go somewhere to look it up and that type of thing, and you've got everything right at the ready. It, again, increases efficiency, safety, and allows you to stop some problems before they might start.
Okay. Tesla, they're going to allow owners to customize sounds. I think this is a Pandora's box.
This could be very, very interesting, and I could see some limitations on the customizations. Now, Jeremy, you know a little bit about this.
I read the article and forwarded it to you because you're, tech guy. But apparently there are some settings that are currently in the Tesla cars. One is called Patsy mode. And if you remember Patsy from Lord, it's the King Arthur and the Round Table with Monty Python.
Okay.
The Holy Grail.
Yeah. Patsy was Arthur's page. Oh, and he ran around behind him with the coconuts.
Right.
So Patsy clop, mode, when you summon your car with Patsy mode, it will clip-clop all the way to you.
Nice.
So apparently that's already in there. It's just not active. But I can see people wanting to have some sounds that are more custom, and you know they want the cars to make noise so that the sighted impaired can know that they're there.
But I
don't want any cars screaming obscenities or other weird things, because you know that's going
to
happen.
People are going to do that. People take it to the extreme, and I think this is a little bit what you were just mentioning with the new rules that are out there for electric vehicles, EVs, and all the rest of it, that there is some sort of a sound, because you do have handicapped, visually impaired, or you know, different people that might not hear the car coming in. It has been somewhat problematic. So having that sound in there makes a lot of sense, but I could see where this could go to an extreme. So it'll be interesting to see how Tesla actually handles that.
All right. And apparently hackers continue to be successful with old attacks.
Yeah. What's old is new again. I mean, that's what this really comes down to. And one of the big ones we're seeing is that curiosity kills the cat. And it also seems that curiosity kills the network. And what's going on is the hackers are leaving rogue USB sticks laying around. Nothing new. This has happened in the past, but I think we're seeing it more because the prices on all this stuff are coming down. They're a lot easier to get now. Somebody goes, I found a memory stick, takes it in, plugs it into the computer, which completely bypasses all the firewalls. A lot of the virus scanners will still work to some extent, but you are actually plugging the device into the machine. So you're no longer scanning for a lot of what you would normally be. And it's a way that's really being successful to intrude on networks. And
you know what would? I'm sorry. You know what would be a really cool device for someone to invent is a scanner for USBs that would look for viruses, scan it, clean it, and then you could put it into your computer.
Yeah, that's like a separate device. I mean, you have that with a virus scanner to some extent. But the thing of it is when you're physically connecting something to the computer, it does allow it for be a lot easier to bypass these things. And there's auto run and some other things like that. So an antivirus is definitely something you want to have under these circumstances. But if you find a USB stick, don't plug it into your home or work computer. If you really need to see what's on there, get something else, find your old machine, and just be prepared that it could cause problems.
Okay. Twitter uses security info for advertising.
Yeah, and people are not happy about this.
I wonder why.
So Twitter, for security verification, has gotten things like phone numbers and local information, and it turns out that they've been targeting ads using that information. And Facebook did this a while back and got fined a huge amount of money, at least to me a huge amount of money. So it seems like Twitter didn't learn anything from that and has been doing the same type of thing here. So I don't know where they're going to actually go with this. They've issued an apology. I don't know if I accept that or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
But it is what it is, and that's what they're doing. So that's our news today. I had a chance this week to go see the press screening of Gemini Man, which is the newest movie by Will Smith that's opening this weekend. And, you know, I have to say I enjoyed sitting through the story. Basically, what you have here is something based around the character Henry Brogan, who is an assassin who becomes a target of a mysterious operative who can seemingly predict his every move. To his horror, he soon learns that the man who's trying to kill him is a younger, faster clone version of himself. So bring out the clones. And, you know, I watched it. I enjoyed it. It's not something that I think I would necessarily go to the theater to see. They did a reasonably good job. But my one big thing here was with the clones. When they were trying to do the younger version of Will Smith, you could really tell it was fake. And that was the one thing that really kind of took the movie away from me. You do have to have a little bit of a suspension of disbelief. I think the technology just isn't quite here to do what they were trying to do with that just yet. But outside of that, the story held its own. Again, enjoyed watching it. I have been rating these things in Thor's hammers. So I think I'd have to give this one 3.5 out of 5. Do you guys think you're going to go see it?
I hadn't intended to. I might, but it to me, when they showed with the plot for the film, to me it reminds me of Looper, which is another time travel thing with an assassin trying to kill himself. So I don't know. So I'll have to think about it.
My favorite part of it was actually seeing the backdrop of Hungary that they used for part of the movie, and That looked really cool. They did a nice job there. So there were some parts of it that I really enjoyed. I mean, you know, but this one, I think I'd wait until DVD or Blu-ray or Netflix or however it actually comes out after it's out of the theater. But if you want a little mindless time and good story, go check it out. After the break today, we're going to talk a little bit about the history of Halloween, the modern version of it, I guess you would say. So join us after the break. Check us out on social media, One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter. Check out the podcast, theanswerportland.com. If you missed the show, you can play it back. We will be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. We're going to be talking Halloween a little bit here today. A little bit of the history and some of what's changed in pop culture on this holiday. Jeremy and Gretchen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So I know you've been doing a little bit of looking into on all of this to kind of see what the history is. And from what I hear, Halloween as we practice it now, not so much the religious side of it where it originally came from, but the modern day, what we think of as Halloween has changed a lot.
Yeah, I remember, especially as a kid, that what we do nowadays and what I observe families doing is completely different than what I did as a kid.
So tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, well, we've got, you know, Halloween based on the harvesting festival of Samhain. Thousands of years ago, most of it comes from the Celtic traditions. And at the summer's end, we've got, you know, everybody wanting to keep together, and all your veils between worlds are getting thinner and thinner as the season closes. So ghosts are more prevalent. So you wanted to be able to protect yourself and protect your family. And so you had all these traditions of bonfires and parties and entertainments to keep everyone from doing anything weird. But as things got farther into the centuries and people started moving over to the United States, we've got more and more mischief showing up. Right. We've got kids stringing ropes across sidewalks to trip people in the dark, tying doorknobs of opposing apartments together, mowing down shrubs, upsetting barrels, rattling or soaping windows. And we've got filled a street with boats.
Yeah, this is like the late 1800s. They were exploding, like in 1888, somebody exploded a pipe bomb. I mean, these are some really intense ideas of pranks, you know, and nowadays we would find that not very prankish.
Yeah, that would be like terrorism.
Yeah.
Now.
Right, right. Well, yeah, this is definitely not something I'd want at my Halloween party. I mean, the boats might be amusing, but blowing things up certainly is not.
In Washington, D.C., like 200 boys used bags of flour, and they would throw the flour on well-dressed people in 1894. And at that time, you know, you think, oh, somebody threw flour on you, big deal. Just throw it into the washing machine and the dryer. That's not what people had to do to wash their clothes back in those days. It was a lot more intense. So a trick like that could ruin somebody's good clothing.
Exactly.
Right.
So now we've got you've got stuff happening in the 50s where you've got more pranks, and you've got people trying to tone down the pranks and get people together to celebrate instead of having everyone running wild. So you've got they start organizing parties, and in the 50s we're able to start purchasing manufactured Halloween costumes. Okay. Up until then, people had to make their own if they wanted to do something.
And they were trying to encourage people to have some kind of treat for the kids.
It's a bribe.
Yeah.
And so is that where Trick or Treat came from?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So the idea was if they could ask nicely, you'd give them candy. If they were jerks about it, you might still give them candy, but then they might soap your windows.
Right, right.
So the idea was that if they ask nicely and you give them candy, they'll leave you alone to try and tone down the pranking and the debauchery, I suppose. I guess
but one of the interesting things is that I find is that at that these earlier times, the kids were out by themselves.
Right, right.
And nowadays, when you answer the door, if the parent isn't standing right behind them, the parent is at the end of the driveway watching the kids, and they walk together. Or the parents have parties in their homes, and the kids invite their friends and things. This is completely different than what's going on.
Yeah, from what you're explaining, I mean, yeah, you know, what it makes me think of, and I just have to say this comes to mind, is the television show Futurama. Now, it wasn't Halloween. I think it was Christmas when they were out.
Their version of Christmas was a little obscure.
Yeah, yeah. But it's the same idea where they go out and destroy things. And so I'm kind of glad we've gotten into the direction we have now, because it seems like it's a lot more fun.
It's a lot more fun.
So the modern idea of wearing costumes. Now, having children involved in that type of thing, it sounds like that wouldn't have even been the case in the late 1800s.
It was usually the teens, and the teens would actually pick on the younger kids. Now, I even remember stuff like that happening to my brother. He went out trick-or-treating. He's older than me. He went out trick-or-treating by himself, and some of the older kids in the neighborhood stole his candy from him.
Wow. That'd be a bummer.
Yeah. And he never went out again.
Yeah.
So that kind of ruins it. But I really like the nowadays atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. But nowadays, it's not necessarily so much the vandalism. There is still things of vandalism here and there, but it's not widespread like it used to be. It's just, you know, a couple of people here and there doing things. So what you've got now is people throwing parties for adults, people and their families throwing their own parties for their kids and their families and their friends. And we've got, you know, $300 million in candy.
Yeah, okay, that was a lot of candy. That was in the 1965. Yeah.
Millions of dollars in candy.
In 1965. So in today's dollars,
yeah.
It's got to be billions.
Yeah, that would be in the billions. Yeah,
think about all the things. There's whole stores now dedicated to just costumes.
Yes. Yeah, stores where I've spent a little bit too much this year myself. So
yeah, well, you know, it's really difficult to walk in there and not buy one thing for $5 and get out.
Right, right.
I wanted that and one of those and that thing and that thing over there.
And they're catering to things that people really like the superheroes, book characters like Harry Potter, the video game characters. Overwatch is really popular.
Oh yeah, they had so many costumes.
Oh man, and so they're. In the old days, it was kind of like, oh, I'm going to dress as a gypsy. Let me see if I can find a scarf and a skirt and some other, like a shawl and my mother's stuff, you know?
Weird little sash thing that makes all the jingles.
Or somebody who dresses up like a hobo, you know, and they smear dirt all over their face and get an old coat. It was very different.
You know? Yeah, that sounds. I know as a kid, I was a ghost 1 year and. You know, that involved a bed sheet, I think, was the entire costume.
So, I remember all the cool costumes in the 80s. It was the weird vinyl jumpsuit with the formed plastic mask and the costume actually said who you were just in case nobody else figured it out.
Okay, that's a little bit of a bummer if you have to do that.
I remember the Star Wars costumes were like that. It had the word Star Wars on it and... you have to look that up. That was pretty bad stuff. So,
So in 2019 now, at least we don't have to do that anymore. So I've got a last question here. We're down to about 30 seconds. For us cosplayers, we have time and energy to put all this together and get our costumes. What does a normal person do to get a costume? Not that we're not normal, but...
Well, you'd go to a store. You could go to Walmart or Target. Or Macy's, the Spirit Halloween. There's a few others that I can't think of at the moment.
Online?
Yeah, you can buy anything. I mean, they literally make any kind of a costume you'd want. You buy a He-Man costume that has a mask and a muscle jumpsuit and a sword.
Well, that sounds amazing. We'll have to post our pictures to social media, and we will do so. We're going to go ahead and do the break. We'll be back in a little bit. This is User Friendly 2.0. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0, where you set the content by sending us your questions. And what questions do we have this week?
Our first question is, what is SEO?
Well, I think it's three letters.
Well, yes, that's obvious, but what
does it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, there you are.
What does the acronym mean, Bill?
Unfortunately, in the computer world, maybe that's also the case. SEO stands for Search Engine Optimization. And what it relates to is the ability of a website to appear and where it appears in the rankings on a search engine. So this would be your Google or whatever it is that you look up. Most people use Google now, but there's a number of them out there still. Bing would be another one. And when you set up your website and program it, and this is just a 10,000-foot view answer, but when you set it up and program it, there's certain things you can do in there to allow the search engines to find you. And as a generic term, that is your SEO.
All right. How do you market on social media?
Oh, boy, we're getting the easy questions today, aren't we?
Yeah.
You know, I think what I'm going to do is give an answer here that this is something that is a discipline. So there isn't just a quick and easy, this is how you do it type answer. And I think This is actually something that we should do a segment on. And we use social media for marketing the show. And Gretchen, I know you do our Twitter and Karen Gill does our Facebook. So in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to set up a segment where we can talk about this a little bit more in depth. But a starting point for this would be to set up your accounts and your business name. Make sure you're separate from your personal. That is very important. And make sure your updates stay current. So as you put information out there, what you don't want to do is have it fall out of current posts because that can look really bad. But there's a whole lot more than we have time for today to answer this. So let's set up a segment and actually dig into this a little bit more. And we'll go ahead and put it out on our social media when that's going to be.
Awesome. Our next question is, what is an exercise tracker watch?
Well, mine's a Fitbit.
Well, yeah, I know. It's a smart. No, do all smartwatches track stuff like that?
The features depend, and the brand and what the focus of the device is can vary very much so. Now, my Fitbit, I've been very happy with. In fact, I just got it recently, and it tracks all of the things like your steps and if you go swimming and how many flights of stairs you've climbed and all of that. I know the Apple Watch has a lot of these type of features, and a number of the other ones do. Samsung makes a good product for that. But what you want to do if you're specifically looking for an exercise tracker is find one that has the functions you need. And even on the Fitbit, which is a line that's designed specifically for use with exercising, they have a lot of different features, and what it can and can't do varies, and also the price varies based on the features that you need. So as a for example, do you want it with GPS? That's going to cost more. Do you want it to be waterproof for swimming? That might cost more, those type of features. But again, check it out. Look them up. Fitbit, Samsung makes a product. If you're on an iPhone, the Apple Watch is very good. With the iPhone 11, it's one of the best updates that's been out there on the Apple line, I think, for a long time. And finding these type of features is just figuring out what you need and how much money you want to spend, really.
All right. That sounds interesting. Our next question. I am still using Windows 7. Do I have to upgrade to Windows 10?
Well, I'm not aware of there being a law.
Well, Microsoft would like to enforce laws.
Yeah, they would. And they have ways of doing this, too. Do you have to upgrade, strictly speaking? No, the computer's not going to blow up if you don't. Now, that being said, there's a whole bunch of reasons why you might want to consider doing this. And the reasons being is mainly security. The end of life of Windows 7 is January 14th of 2020, so coming up here in a couple of months after the New Year's. And after the New Year, what that means is that there will no longer be things like security updates. So right now it's in its extended support period. The basic support ran out a while back, but they still are doing those type of things. And like with Windows XP, if you don't do the upgrade, you can end up in a situation where it becomes much more hackable and that type of a thing.
It might also slow down too, don't you think?
Yeah, well, and as computers get older, you always have that type of thing with what we call space junk, stuff that's sitting out there, the ability to clean it. The other thing of it is the support from antivirus programs and that type of thing will start to drop off more and more after the end of life of the operating system. One thing that's a lot better than what we were dealing with Windows XP going to Windows 8 a few years ago is that Windows 10 has actually proven to be a very good operating system. There aren't the problems. It has its idiosyncrasies, of course, but there aren't the problems like Windows 8 had. So if you do an upgrade from 7 to 10, you're probably going to be a lot happier than that one would have been. But the other thing is to make sure that if you're running Windows 7, it's probably on a little bit older hardware that your actual computer can handle Windows 10. So it might be time to consider actually doing an upgrade and having the new operating system pre-installed. So those are our questions for this week. Send us your questions on social media, one user friendly on Twitter, one user friendly on Facebook. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Send us your questions, send us your comments. Our Q&A that we just did is built on what you send into the show. One User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter, or you can give us a call, 503-766-6264. When you call, you'll get our wonderful automated attendant and leave your idea or comment at the tone. And then what happens is we either just use it directly on the air or we'll call you back and put you on the show maybe. So, Jeremy, I hear you have read a book. It is called Set in Stone by Frank Moran. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, well, it is the first in a set of three. It's a book about the Petrolists, which is Frank came up with a magic system based on rocks or stones. So different types of stones grant you different types of powers. When I was reading it, I was thinking of the earthbenders and the firebenders and the waterbenders from the Avatar series. Because when you use this rock, you can certain rocks give you certain powers. But the basis of the story is that the hero is Connor. He's turning 16 and his world goes upside down. Just absolutely just rocked off the rails.
So is it kind of like a coming of age story?
Kind of, but his coming of age gives him magic powers.
Oh. Well, I didn't have that happen when I turned 16.
No, neither did I. I was just happy to get my driver's license.
Yeah. That was kind of a magic power.
it's kind of like a medieval setting, so there's no guns, there's no cars or anything. But you've got people in villages, and the village that they're in has a quarry nearby, so there's lots of stones and rock puns and other fun things like that. But the back of his book says, when armies descend upon his peaceful village, led by superhuman petrolists and clever builders, most people run and hide. Connor's not that smart. He's caught up in the middle of escalating conflict and learns his curse is the rarest of powers. Both sides will do anything to control it and secure his loyalty. So, I mean, it's pretty good. There's a lot of twists and turns. It's 100 chapters. It's over 400 pages, so it's a pretty good sized book. And there's two more. So I'm looking forward to finding Frank again at another Comic-Con and maybe getting him to autograph the other two.
I was going to ask you, is this the book that we got at Rose City?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So
he's probably going to be excited about, oh, hey, they're talking about my book.
Right. Well, what type of an audience do you think this appeals to?
I think it's pretty much for just about anybody. You got if you've got children, young adults, they're going to read it as a coming of age story. You've got adults reading it to the children. I'm an adult. I read it. I thought it was pretty good.
Right, so you think you could read it to your 9-year-old?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. That's so cool. Yeah, so the 9-year-old would enjoy it, but also an adult would enjoy it.
Yeah, it's fantasy, action, adventure, magic, and people with superpowers.
Okay, no, that sounds incredible. Set in Stone, Frank Moran is the author. Did I say his name right?
Moran.
Okay, Frank Moran is the author. Set in Stone is the title. And we're going to go ahead and put that out on our social media, how to find this book and his series of books, because this isn't the only one he's written. It's just the first one we've read.
And he does have some other series, too.
Yeah, he actually tried to talk me into something that was more science fiction. But I'm in the middle of reading some other stuff, so I kind of plod along.
Absolutely.
And then open my mind.
But it sounds like it's definitely worth doing. And then the other thing that we're going to review today, so you get a lot of reviews today, is Downton Abbey. We finally had a chance to see it. We didn't get to see it when it came out, but did a couple of weeks afterwards. And I will give my opinion on this first, and then we can all talk about it. But I think it's one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Yeah, I thought so too. It was really nice. If you like Downton Abbey, this is...
it's just as good as the series.
Absolutely.
Because the series has done really well.
So to give a little bit of a background, Downton Abbey is a series that ran for a number of seasons on PBS. And it's set in the 19-teens to the 1920s, depending on where you watch it. And the story is about a house lord and lady. I think they might have a little different title than that. But this giant manor house that has a staff, so there's servants and maids and butlers and valet and all of that type of thing. And in my opinion, has always been a real kind of fun, accurate way to look at what life was like in that era. And the story in the movie picks up on that in 1927, the premise being that the king and queen are going to come visit and how that reacts and all of the different politics that goes along with the staff from the king and queen and the local house staff and everything that's connected to that. So that would be our basic storyline. I'm not going to give any spoiler alerts here to anybody that hasn't seen it, but it was really, I think, worth watching. Gretchen, what was your favorite part of the movie?
Oh, you know, there wasn't really just one favorite part. If you're a Downton Abbey fan, you have to see this. It's a must because all the characters that you love, and I like so many of the different characters, the ones that, you know, one character who seems like he's a villain and then he gets a little better and then you start to feel sorry for him and he does something nasty again. And you've got to find out what happens to Barrow.
Right.
And then Violet. She's just awesome. And that's played by Maggie Smith.
Yeah, she gets the best one-liners. She really does.
And her story continues, and you get to find out more about her. And then, of course, all the daughters and the original two parents. And then the downstairs family, who are the servants. They are like a family.
Yep. Yep.
And they all care about each other. It's fascinating.
And, you know, it's interesting because, to clarify, this isn't servants like slaves or anything. They're hired people that are paid for these positions. And in that era, it would be people that were very, very trained at what they do. So your valet knew how to be a valet.
And they usually were very proud of the work they did.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you had a good reputation, you would have been sought after for work all over the country and at that time all over the empire, you know. So it was definitely a big deal. So it's something to... Or when you talk about the staff, these people are there by their choice, and they're very good at what they do, usually.
I would agree.
So, Jeremy, what was your favorite part of the movie?
I really enjoyed the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the dancing and all the, you know, you can't just walk into there with your suit and tie. You have to dress up. So everyone, you know, there's all these tuxedos and all these fancy dresses and... You know, it's just more elaborate than anything.
And our favorite Irishman is trying his best to fit in.
Yeah,
yep, absolutely, as they always do. Well, Downton Abbey, definitely worth seeing. I think even in the theater, this one's good. It just was a movie that we all enjoyed. So coming up on User Friendly, we are going to be covering the XRDC conference next week, a virtual reality annual show that's held in San Francisco. See what the new technology is there. Also coming up is going to be the Global Gaming Expo, and we will be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Next week, we are going to be at the Virtual Reality Conference in San Francisco. Are you guys excited?
I think so. I hope there's more stuff than last year.
Well, it wasn't last year. It's 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah. It's been 2 years since we went. Yeah.
I hope there's more stuff.
I want to try out more stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. From what I'm hearing, the floor is supposed to be a little bit bigger, although the stuff that we saw 2 years ago was definitely very much worthwhile. And where the technology with all this stuff is headed, we talked a little bit about this earlier in the week on Text Tuesday here, and I think that it's going to be very interesting to see how this is coming into its own now. We are seeing gaming, which certainly is an aspect of virtual reality, but there is also medical use in industry, all kinds of things. And just a real quick 10,000-foot view of it. So one of the questions that we always get on this, virtual reality and augmented reality, how they compare. Virtual reality is where you generally wear a mask and it changes the entire environment you're in. And augmented reality, you stay in the environment you're in and have additional information. So if you're downtown in a city with augmented reality, you would look around and it would tell you what the name of a building is or the hours of a restaurant, something like that. So this conference actually does cover both techniques, but its primary focus is virtual reality and where that's going. And Gretchen, I know that you've liked this in gaming. We've used the Oculus Rift. And Beat Saber is a game you like. Tell us a little bit about that.
What, Beat Saber?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's like you're put into an environment like you're in a video game. And you have these things in your hand, but they're no longer these weird devices. You're holding lightsabers. And you're busting these things that come flying at you. And that's how you win the points. and there's great music to do this too. It's a lot of fun. And it's a great workout too.
Yeah, it's good exercise. I've noticed that as well. And it's one of the best games. There's a lot of options out there on the system. Sony PlayStation has a virtual reality headset. They're coming out for a number of different platforms now. And it's depending on what you want. I still think the wired ones are a little more powerful and don't have the battery problems. And Jeremy, I know one of the first things you saw on it was a news show, but tell us how that was special.
Oh, well, when we were looking at it, when you first got the thing, I was on the couch looking at the what was the where your TV was, but I was in the studio, but I was between the camera crew and the actors. So they're at their desk, they're talking about their stuff, and I just thought, you know, I'll look around, and I saw the lighting grid up above them, and I thought, oh, I wonder what else is, and I started to turn around on the couch, and behind me was the camera crew. Like the whole camera crew, all the people, there's guys with clipboards, the camera crew, all these people wandering around behind me who weren't part of the show, but they were still somehow being filmed by the thing that was I was watching.
Yeah. So that was kind of fun.
It was neat.
The 360 camera's good too. Google yeah. Earth has a mode for this now. And, you know, there's all kinds of things coming out. But next week, we're going to see some of the newest stuff. We're going to have some interviews with people at the show and tell you about what's going on with that and what all of the newest, latest, greatest is. This is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019 User-Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User-Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.